Mr. Whittaker, Reel 21. We were talking about the final moments at Knightsbridge, but I think just to drop in here, you had been told that you were going to be made a sergeant, and this connected with your desire to be an officer as well. Could you just tell me what had happened, though? We'll just drop this in the tale.
Yes, I've not really any great ambitions, but I did think, well, I've begun to think, well, if so-and-so can do it, why should I? And I asked Major Burke just what he had to do, you know, and he told me that Ed Moore said, well, you're doing all right, but it's essential that you have experience on the guns. He's doing what he could have been going around like, so he told me that he actually had put the name forward to go as full sergeant, and that at the right time I was going to go on a gun. I didn't think much to it, to be quite honest. I could see difficulties if I took over a gun crew and all been together, and say you've got a bombardier there who knew all about guns, and me, battery commander's assistant, OP. But anyway, that was by the way. The other chap who I'd like to mention was our Australian Aston Bryan. The Australian seaman who'd done such a magnificent job loading guns into Brook. And he'd been persuaded that he'd be full of that job financially and in the view of promotion in the Australian army, where the pay was far better, and he was a good, I think he'd been promoted with them, he was a nice chap. Anyway, and actually during, at some stage, and I always say it was the 6th of June, but I must admit I'm not entirely, but we did get notice that his transfer to the Australian artillery had come through, which I've often wondered since, if his transfer, because if he was transferred, of course, he'd get paid as an Australian all the way all the way through prison camp. But I thought it was... I wasn't particularly bothered about my promotion, but I've always felt a bit sorry for our Australian friends.
So your promotion wasn't confirmed, then?
No.
Now, what happened... Before, you were in a slit trench, but do you know what had happened to Major Birkin, Peter Birkin?
I didn't find out for an hour or two. I got out of the slit trench after this awful few minutes, and when I pulled myself together...
Were you in a bit of a state by now?
I was absolutely horrified, mainly not so much frightened as this, but as what had happened to these people who I'd been talking to a moment before. And then when I got up, I felt like... I could have sat down and cried, to be honest. And to my surprise, right in front, and I haven't seen it, you can guess what's the state I'm in, was our armoured car. Ex-car. And I thought, oh, well. I looked at my big pack, strapped to the side, where I'd got photos that I hadn't dared send home, you know, because of censorship. And I thought, no, a bit too heavy. Got my small pack with me. Shaving kit, got my water bottle, great coat, don't think I've got the pullover. And by this time, German tanks were never with us. And I, as I said,
they weren't shooting at you, though.
They weren't shooting at us, they were just one, just rolling over. And it was all quite, there's a sort of deadly, you know, when they say there's a deathly hush in the close tonight, it was like that. All of a sudden, everything had gone.
So no, you were, as far as you were concerned, you were already a prisoner.
I was a prisoner. The tank, everything was quiet.
You were just getting as much kit as you could carry.
I was just going to get what I thought was necessary and what I dare. I didn't want to get, quite frankly, I didn't want to get shot in one of these wandering tanks thinking I was going to pick up a weapon or something.
What about, was the armoured car, had it been damaged or...
When I looked inside it, first thing I was bothered about was to say I collected my water bottle, which I knew was, if we were in the desert for prisoners. Then I got up and had a look in the car. Jim Hardy was there, and there was a great big hole through the left-hand side. It had obviously gone through the left-hand side, straight to the Sergeant Major, Jim Hardy. And when I looked, when I got out of the car, it had gone either through the part of the engine or the bonnet. It had gone clean through both sides, armour piercing shot. Found out, what I did then, I wandered off, I could see a bunch of people, and I thought, well, I'll go and join them. So I walked, and I hadn't gone far, big clank, 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 right at the side of me. The German tank stopped. Very, I must say, a very pleasant young man, about my own age. Cap on, earphone. He leaned down and said, where are you going? So I looked at him and made a classic remark. I said, with you. Hop up, he said. So I climbed up and he said, for you the war is over. He always said that. And
people keep saying that they all said this.
They all knew it. If they only knew that English, they knew that.
Well, the other bits he said, that was English as well, though, wasn't it?
English as well.
So he did speak English.
He said to me, what's Cairo like? And with a bit of bravado, I said, you won't see Cairo. And he laughed. He said something like, you're not in much of a position to tell me. Well, you know, I've forgotten, but he just laughed it off as a, you know, I'm very despondent, but didn't want to show it, that he, but he... He said,
you were just on the side of the tank?
I stood at the side of him on the turret. He was leaning in his turret. He'd got bars on. I found out after he was a helping captain, which was only young, it was very nice of him with all. He said, we passed this thing about Cairo, and he shrugged and laughed at me. And he said, passed some the dogs hardly. You know, he'd probably see it before I did or some. Then he said, where are you from? And me remembering number bank and name, thought the hell, I said, oh, Nottingham. And he said, I don't know Nottingham. He said, I was at Oxford for a bit. He said, London I know quite well. So I said, oh, I don't know London. And he said, oh, very, very nice city. And then, at this time, we're near the people, so near this group of people, so he said, here we are. And as I hopped off, he said, good luck. And off he came.
And who was in this group? How many were there?
At that time, a small group. We walked up. And then we walked up there on the Germans. This time they were beginning to round us up, infantry. And they walked us up the slope in where our gun position had been, and got together a group of most of the South Knots.
All in one group?
All in one group.
And about how many would there be, roughly?
100. So, and just as we got in this group, guess what? Over came a flaming Royal Air Force plane and dropped a bomb. And fortunately, again for me, it dropped on the other side of the group. Didn't drop in the group, but we rushed across and then again it had wounded quite a few small bomb. They only carried a small bomb, but it had wounded quite a few of our lads, otherwise it got away unscathed, which didn't help me out at all. The only marches that night, as I say, dark, it was soon dark, they didn't march as far.
Now, is this where you found out what had happened to Birkin?
Because
you'd seen the car smashed up. Yeah, did you think he was dead?
I thought he must have gone, but anyway, he was there.
Amongst that group?
He came on the first, after the, it wasn't amongst the first group, because as we marched away, we came across him. And I can't remember any of the other officers at all. But I know he was there, because of course I went and said, what happened? they told me that they'd been driving on this car, and apparently this, he always said that the this shot, he'd been standing like that, and it had gone through his legs before it had hit Jim Hall, and he was sitting down. That's all he did. As I say, from then on, he said I was on foot, and he'd been with the other. He'd gone across to the other troop, not the one that we knew. As they gathered us together, he said, if anybody wants to escape, the bearing is so safe. But this time, of course, I knew then why the Italians and German prisoners seem to always look so, such a rotten, straggling bunch. Completely, it's a demoralising experience. Weird feeling, enormous relief that you've got away with it. And I remember feeling awfully guilty because of all the people who got killed, badly wounded, and I hadn't. I think, it was a mixture of guilt and relief. And when it began to, and of course, mixed in with it was this feeling for you, the war is over, you were thinking a bit of hooray, it really is, I'm going to get away with it.
Now, what exactly did you have with you then? What were you wearing and what did you have in your small kit?
I took my steel helmet away. I've got the side hat, short sleeve shirt, shorts, hose tops, which were, they were stockings without feet. You had your stocking, you had your socks, and then you wore these things, and then you had what's called short putties, and they covered the gap in between the things. And a pair of boots. I hadn't got my pencils on that day. It had been tin hats and I'd also got with me, which I didn't realise until I got my binoculars and my compass. And the Germans had been around, they'd not bothered me, but they'd been around collecting souvenirs from some people. And I, just as it got dark, and they said, they'd post only a few guards around us, and said, stop here for the night, and I buried them with a hole and buried my compass and binoculars. But well, at least I'm not giving them anything.
What did you have in your small kit?
Shaving kit. I've got what personal things I've got. Most of the shaving kit. I think a towel.
Did you have much spare socks, underwear, anything like that?
No, nothing.
So that was it.
And the water bottle, which was full.
Any other food? Any food?
Nothing at all.
So you were very demoralised.
Yep.
And what happened next?
Well, we didn't try to escape.
Could you have done?
I think there wasn't much. You could have crawled away, possibly. There were one or two guys, but they were quite keen. They walked round and shouted across to one another. I don't know if anybody did. I don't think so.
Did anybody escape?
I don't think they did from that lot. I think everybody was absolutely, the day had been too much for us. The following morning.
So you slept out?
Just got down and, no blankets.
What about care of the wounded? Were there any wounded near you?
They did take them away. These people who'd been, the people who'd been moved in this, this bomb attack, the Germans did take them away. And, for instance, Jack was wounded. I hadn't seen him at all. But he told me, they did pick the wounded up.
Had they given you any food or anything to eat at all?
Nothing at all.
Or drink?
No. Not till the next morning. They marched to the bit of the next morning, clear of this, our gun position over this collecting a bit, and then they began to collect more people then from other regiments, so collecting people together. They brought a big oil drum and filled it with water from a tanker. And as I say, the only officer I can remember there was Major Birkin. So they called him, they could see, you know, they sort of gave it to him, said, you sort it out, the water. The only thing most of us got, he said to me, come and give me a hand. Went up to this water tank and he got a steel helmet. He said, all we've got is a steel helmet. If you've only got a steel helmet, use it to get a drink. If you've got anything to save it, try and save it. For instance, I tried to pour some of mine into the water bottle, which was an awful incident, almost as soon as within hours of getting caught. Not the South officers are. Birkin was sharing the water out, as I say, one steel helmet per man. And some chap, big hulking fella, came up and said, you don't have to take a note of any anymore. He said, it's every man for his up himself now. And big truculent fella. And he sort of comes up truculent to Birkin. Isn't that right, mate? He said, get in line. Get fell in. He said, as I've said, he said, take no notes of him, mate. He says, every man's, and he came forward. So Peter hit him bang in the face with the steel helmet and said, now that it's a who's next. And that effectively crossed the first mutiny.
It must have hurt him.
I hope so. It did, it flattened him. But I saw then what he meant when he'd always told me to be decisive. But it was no time for playing the officer and gentleman. He said, now look, lads, get in. So this chap meant it.
Birkin was quite a big man himself, wasn't he?
A bit bigger than me, but very broad, hefty.
Quite strong.
Very strong, yeah, but like a bird.
Because he was a rugby player, wasn't he?
Forward.
So you wouldn't be frightened of this bloke?
No, as I say, but he came. And he had to reach up. Day one. We hung about there. They brought, I think they gave us a few biscuits. And then there wasn't much for me to fall for some days, but it was more or less biscuits and and to our disgust, which would be with the Germans, tins of bully beef, which I had to share amongst them.
Was it English bully?
Of course. As I say, it abused the Germans. We didn't do much marching. Eventually, trucks came and they took us through this path that cut through the minefield.
So you were getting right away now?
We were rapidly getting away. And it wasn't a straight path. They could have lifted them, quite a torturous sort of zigzag pattern. And while we were in the middle of it, we got strafed by there was one or two Americans, but they, no bombs this time, just machine guns. There was room, fortunately, the track was fairly broad, and as these were not like ours, but pretty ramshackle, open side, and we just rough seat down the side. And as I bailed out, just as I hit the deck, the chap coming over me jumped on me, hit me in the face with his boot. And for days afterwards, people asked me if I was all right, what about my wounds? But it was literally, it hit me. I don't think it hurt me, I think I was feeling too down. But I know it, my face was a mess. So they took us to a small sort of holding area, sorted into groups. Before they took the officers away, they'd handed us over to the Italians very apologetically.
At this small transit camp?
Which was quite near to Tamimi, where we had our famous duck shoot. They were very apologetic, the Germans. They said, we've got to hand you over to them. Most of them did speak English. They said that, you know, the Italians said, oh, soldiers, usual. You know, you and me are this sort of banter. Before the officers were taken away, the Italians had begun to come and collect souvenirs, watches, fountain pens. I got a watch, which I purchased actually from another South Knots as well. I've still got it, it's got his name and number engraved on the back. I gave this to Major Birkin and said, you'll probably escape a lot sooner than I shall. I said, how about taking it home for me, telling my folks that I'm all right, you know, half, you know, jokingly. But he took the watch and he said, I'll see that it gets there. Off he went with my, and I didn't see him for several years. And I'm pleased to say, I've still got the watch, and he did escape. And he took my watch home. And he bartered his gold hunter, or half hunter, is it? One that, which was gold, beautifully engraved, which he carried. He bartered that for food when he escaped from Italy. And he kept mine. And he took it home and gave it to the mother and father. I wore it for years until I got the one I'm wearing now, my 25-year one from MGAS, when it just packed in. It was full of sand when I came home, and a friend of mine had been in Remy.
So, we might as well mention Birkin now, because that's the end of him, really, in your story. You actually think well of Birkin, and always did, even...
Yes, oh yes. He had his faults. But as an officer, he was. I found him very good.
He comes across as a real character.
Yes, he was. As I say, he had this, you know, his, as we call him, a pufter, etc. But I can assure you that as his assistant, his thoughts were for 45.
And he wasn't an effeminate homosexual.
No, he was very much the opposite. Frightened to death, thinking what he. You know, get your slip trench as far away from him as you could at night, that sort of thing. It was a good officer. What I liked was it was all for 45.
And what happened to him after the war? Did you meet him again
yes,
after the
war? Oh, yes. Risked my reputation. We went out and dined with him a bit. We drank a lot when we first came back. But later on, until I got married. Used to see him now and again.
Socially, I mean, socially. As equals, or?
Oh, yes. He called me up, actually, we looked at the drawings for the regimental history, the OPs and things, and we did them some which we didn't use, you know, and he showed me things which.
Did you draw some of them then?
I didn't draw any of them.
But you looked at
them? Looked at them, and we did them some which we didn't use.
And what happened to him in the end? Because was he an alcoholic in the army? I haven't heard that.
He drank. He was a whiskey drinker. He drank pretty well, and he, like the rest of us, he'd get fairly sober. But he'd been sober up almost, you know, the following day. He didn't mind if you had to go and do it the next morning. Whatever you'd done, that he didn't give a damn as long as you.
And he was the same himself?
And he was the same himself.
So his drinking, he wasn't a problem drinker during the war?
No.
Was there any signs of it?
I wouldn't have said so. I didn't know much about it.
And what? So his drinking got a bit out of hand after the war?
Got completely out of hand afterwards. To the extent, as I say, when he... the odd social occasion when he did alarm, it was when... Going down a hill in Nottingham, Derby Road, and we met a vehicle coming up the other way, and he said, what's that silly sod doing on the wrong side of the road? And it was a trolley bus, which is, you know, we're on wires. And I must admit, after that, I began to think, well, I'd better watch him. He's not really, you know...
Now, he was... he was ostracised by the other officers, you were telling
us. Yes, after his prison, he got a month or something.
Could you just explain what it was for, briefly? What is prison?
I think they'd been after him for some time.
The police?
Because of his drunken driving. As I say, I began to get a bit wary after this incident. And they'd had one incident where he'd run his car into this stone pillar. He had a huge house in a place called the Park, Nottingham. And the police had tried to get him for that. But one of the drivers, he used to pay, sometimes they would go for him for a bit. And one of them took the blame. I don't think that was Dave, but one of them took the blame for this. But then he crashed his car on the main road in Nottingham, wrapped it around a lamppost, and was too drunk to get out. And they fixed it, I think. You know, it got away with this charge of indecency.
That was connected with his
homosexual activities. But unfortunately for them, they'd chosen the wrong date to concentrate on. But after he came out of one or two of our chaps, he visited him in prison.
Other ranks or officers?
And when he came out and came to the dinners, he got a place on the top table, but right away at the side. And he was very much persona non grata creature.
Sorry?
Yes, persona non grata.
So people, the officers wouldn't talk to him?
They'd say hello and that was it.
What about the men?
Everybody, most of us went out for a wait to talk to him.
But was he himself? I mean, was the drinking taking hold?
It had really got hold at this time. As I say, he'd come in and he'd be all right, how are you, and one drink and he'd gone. He was absolutely reeling and incoherent after one small whiskey. First time I knew what, alcoholic was.
And when did you last see him there? Because he died. When did he die?
He